This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book How to Change, Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind our decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why we do the things we do. Listen to Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Felix is going to run point as your comms today for the interview.
Okay.
In case great. I get out of line.
That's right.
He's going to escort me out.
Yes.
Hopefully one of us will get in trouble for this interview with our respective government.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
You're listening to How To. I'm Amanda Ripley. So the other day I went on a walk up the street to visit a neighbor, kind of like Mr. Rogers, but without the cardigan.
Here we are.
We are delighted to be here for many reasons, but we
Jacques Pidou is the Swiss ambassador to the United States, and he and I are sitting in his formal, modern dining room in the official ambassador's residence, which includes a really large plot of open land behind it, right in the middle of Washington, D.C. And it's got just a stunning view. I've walked by this property countless times, but this is the first time I'm actually past the gate.
We are on one of the few hills from whence one can see the Washington Monument. And the urban legend is that it was one of the places that had been picked to build the Capitol, and then they realized it was too far away from the swamp.
Ambassador Pidou first joined the Swiss Foreign Service in 1987, and since then he has worked all over the world, from Kenya to Rwanda to Saudi Arabia. Diplomacy can be a pretty stressful line of work, so the ambassador often turns to nature for relief, particularly bird watching.
And so 2 weeks ago, I was looking for the morning warbler. It's difficult and you have to be extremely lucky to be at the right spot, right moment. So I drove 4 hours. I was there, so starting at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was there at 6 o'clock when you get a chance to hear it. Got my pictures of the morning warbler. It was the last one I didn't have, you know, from the region.
So it's a little bit like a very peaceful form of hunting.
It's hunting,
yeah,
without killing. But it's the same instinct. And I do imagine it's the same, you know, release of adrenaline.
Yeah.
Once you, oh my God, you know, the morning warbler, got it. You know,
yeah, so. I bet it is. Yeah. Yeah. Is that how it felt? Like just euphoria when you got
oh,
it?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, nice. Indeed.
So if you could take me back to the first day you saw the property here, the ambassador's residence in Washington, can you describe what you saw and what your initial reaction was?
I was amazed by the beauty of the whole setting. The building is extraordinary. The view is fantastic. I was also struck by the fact that we had a very big plot. I don't know exactly how many acres, but it's pretty big, and that it looked like a golf course. And I don't like golf courses. They look good, but they are ecological disasters.
So as we heard in last week's episode, turns out that grass lawns are total wastelands from a biodiversity perspective. They need 1 to 1.5 inches of rain per week, and they don't give much back. They don't support pollinators like birds or bees, and they usually require a whole bunch of chemicals to look good.
My feeling was really we need to start doing something about it, because in the meantime, having been active in nature and conservation for so many years, I knew that it's not just about national laws or international treaties, it's about local efforts. And I realized that I had the unique opportunity, being for a limited number of years, like the master of the house on this plot, to change something and to try to serve as an example.
It's not just about policy.
It's about creating islands, as many as possible, and even a small plot, even your small garden in front of your small townhouse can make a difference. Because it's one small island from which insects and birds and other animals can hop to the next one.
I know I often have this feeling like there's nothing I can do individually on climate change. It's sort of I feel very disempowered, frustrated, but what you're saying is that there are things we can do, and if we all do them, then it does become collective action.
It's all a matter of scaling it up. But before you start scaling it up, you need to demonstrate the feasibility of the concept. So my first reaction was to stop using pesticides. And I told the gardening team, there will be no pesticides on this property, and we will see what happens. And of course, the first reaction of the gardeners was, but it's not going to look that good. And I said, well, it all depends what you consider looking good. And then I started researching. And there was this beautiful program by Audubon Society of America. They have this fantastic website where you can go put in your zip code, and they will tell you what to plant in order to recreate the biodiversity as it was before human intervention, or at least before industrial agriculture and before golf courses. I then started a dialogue with my gardening team to say, what could we do? And that's how it started.
Were there other challenges, I don't know, from the neighbors, you know, people like me, or other people who maybe just didn't get it at first?
That's one of the advantages of enjoying diplomatic immunity, you know. So no, frankly, the neighbors, I think in the beginning, didn't realize what was happening. And at some point, I was with a gardening team in the garden, and someone speaks to me from the other side of the fence and says, are you the ambassador? And I go, yeah. Do you realize you have such a huge plot and you don't have bees? And I said, yes, I do realize. And what you propose to do? And he says, I'm the head of the Beekeepers Association. Can we use your plot? And I said, of course. And now we have the bees. We are the biggest beekeeper in Washington, D.C. And we see the insects coming back. I mean, this year, for the first time, we've had so many fireflies. And fireflies are a very important ecological indicator. The fireflies are the first to go and the last to come back. They are very, very sensitive to changes in the environment. And we've had monarch butterflies. I was so glad to see monarch butterflies because they are disappearing fast. But as soon as you give nature a chance, as soon as you create an island, there is a potential for them to come back.
On today's show, we're going outside and going to get our hands dirty, building on last week's conversation about how to save the planet one backyard at a time. Now, normally, diplomatic compounds like this are off-limits to the public, but Ambassador Pete Liu has welcomed us here to prove what is possible. And for him, it's about way more than gardening. It's funny because when we were dreaming of inviting you on this show, we were worried that you wouldn't come because you're busy with important matters of state. But I can tell listening to you that this is an important matter of state.
A matter of for all states and for the international community to deal with now. Not in the 22nd century, it will be too late. So we can't just wait.
All right, let's take a walk, if that's all right. Coming up, the ambassador is going to show us how he transformed the once perfect lawn outside his residence into a less perfect wildlife preserve. And he'll share advice on how all of us can help conserve our little piece of the planet, one lawn at a time. Stick around.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now, getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Can you believe this view?
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, want to tell us what you're seeing?
Yeah, I'm seeing a break in the trees that perfectly frames the Washington Monument. Beautiful big trees here. How many trees did you plant?
Around 20 so far. So there is this big tree here that I just didn't have the heart to take it down. It should be here. It's a Japanese tree. It has no reason to be here, but it's so gorgeous I just couldn't take it down. But what's interesting is the mix. We have pines, we have oaks, and so here you see on the right the test dry meadows that we've been creating, and then we'll walk down where the wet meadows is. And the idea is to transform the whole slope here that anyway we never really used it.
And you can already see that the grass has more going on.
Of course.
So there's more, it's not just plain grass at this point.
It's not plain grass anymore. It has lots of
clovers.
Irish clovers. Yeah, that is definitely something that insects love a lot.
So we had an expert we interviewed for this show who is a wildlife expert who helps people try to transform the ratio of their yard. So it's often 90% grass, 10% other,
yeah,
like trees and bushes, and he's trying to flip it, you know, so that it's more, a greater percentage.
And that's exactly the idea. And so this is the reason why we've been planting shrubs, but they need time to grow.
Right.
And you might have noticed there is this ungainly pile of dead wood, and that is also something that's really important because it gives the opportunity for many insects, especially for the much endangered wild bees, carpenter bees, burrowing bees, to survive.
So this is the debris from the yard.
It's the debris from the yard, and instead of burning it,
right,
or I don't know, whatever, we try to keep quite a large proportion of it to create also islands of, it's very good for all the worms, all the, and that is maybe the most problematic aspect when you're dealing with the neighbors, because it's not necessarily quite nice to look at.
But once you know what it is and appreciate
it's
filled with life,
indeed,
then I think you see it a little differently. I'm most excited about this because every year we buy a ton of mulch for our little tiny row house yard. Doug, the expert we interviewed, said, stop doing that.
Stop
just
doing that. Use
your
own, of course.
Exactly. And so I'm super excited to argue about this with my husband for 3 hours and win. That's my goal, is to win this.
Oh, you like to win too. Okay, I understand that. You know, and by the way, the leaves, it's so important to leave them, especially in the first 3 weeks.
Okay.
Before you mulch them, because in the first 3 weeks, that's when they are really feeding all the earthworms for the winter. And so if you take them away every day, because it's ungainly looking,
right,
and it's exactly what one shouldn't do.
Huh.
So you leave the leaves for the first 3 to 4 weeks, then you can mulch them. But it's all
awesome.
Things that one needs to learn.
I love that because it's giving me an excuse to not rake the leaves as much and not ship them away.
Did you really need an excuse, did you? Okay.
No, I already did that, but now I can tell my neighbors, you know.
Yeah, that this is about the environment.
That I'm just
And I'm
person.
Sorry, today my cottontails seem to be on strike because I have lots of cottontails.
Lots of rabbits, oh.
Yeah,
great.
Rabbits, yeah. But it's a little bit too hot.
I don't know if those are butterflies or
some kind of
insect.
No, they're dragonflies.
Dragonflies.
The dragonflies are coming back, too.
Nice.
The dragonflies are coming back, too.
That's
so shall
cool.
we shall
yes,
we walk
let's
down?
Walk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cicada sounds. You always count on the
cicadas. Oh, the cicadas, we had them. And so here on this particular pine tree, I've been working with the City of Washington, trying to get the first ever eastern screech owl to nest on Swiss territory. But so far we haven't been successful. It would be an ideal spot, but so far so we installed this nesting box, and it's specific for the eastern screech owl.
Has anyone ever visited that you know?
Yes, I saw one eastern screech owl. I was so happy, but she stayed 2 days and went.
She had somewhere to be.
Or maybe she didn't find a mate, because here in the city it's very uncommon.
So you need to get a critical mass of the screech owls.
Of course. But it would be, I mean, that would be my dream. I mean, if I could get an eastern screech owl, a Swiss one, that would be nice.
Awesome. Looking out at this, and we've got the meadow here, we've got, you know, 50 beehives down there, the box waiting for the nest waiting for the screech owl. Can you Just share one word or a few words that come to mind for how you feel.
Emotional. I feel emotional about that because I think that we are really trying to set an example for what everyone could do. So as you can see, these are typical dry meadows because, of course, the water doesn't accumulate on a slope. Mm. So you cannot plant it a wet meadow here. It has to be a dry meadow. Yep. The bees love it. So do the birds. Right now we've been planting sunflowers. The American goldfinches, they love the sunflowers. I mean, I've been photographing all 7 woodpecker species in this plot.
Really?
All 7 of them, yeah. Which is incredible. They don't all live here, but all 7 of them have been here.
Huh, and you've got them all?
Of course. I've lost count, but I've definitely seen and photographed more than 80 species in this garden.
Species of birds?
Of birds.
Wow.
Only the birds.
Wow.
Only the birds, yeah. Yeah. Huh. Which is not bad.
It's not bad. Can you explain to the listener what we're approaching here?
So there is a row of bee hives, bee houses, around 15 of them, and we have other ones behind the meadows. Right now we are well over 1 million. Hmm. We probably have 1,300,000-1,400,000 bees.
Wow, and so colorful, which is nice.
Yeah, and so they are being collected by the Beekeepers Association. Every time someone calls because there is a swarm of bees, and they come and collect them and then bring them for political asylum in the residence of the Swiss ambassador. And there is a whole art of how you combine the swarms without them fighting each other. And if you discover a swarm that doesn't have a queen, how do you combine it with an already existing swarm that's living here? And then there is also, how do you make sure that they don't fly back to where they came from? Because bees, if you take them from a distance of less than 4 miles away, they will always fly back to where they were.
Really?
They have this very interesting technique that they bring the swarm into a bee house, and then they put branches in front of the exit. And because there are branches in front of the exit, the bees are disoriented, and so they reset their GPS. And once they have reset their GPSs, they will always come back to this place and not to the place that was on the other side.
Wow.
But they are all tricks that I never heard about.
It's incredible. And, bees, I don't think, like, they're an amazing, I mean, you can learn a lot about diplomacy, am I right?
From
bees, because they work as a collective.
Indeed. They would kill each other if you would put them in the same house. So they put them in the same house but at different levels, and they put newspapers between the two levels. And by the time the bees have eaten their way through the newspapers, they are used to each other and they belong to the same swarm. It's amazing.
Wow.
But I never knew all these things. I've been learning a lot.
Yeah, we can see above the bee houses just a sort of riot. I mean, a civilized riot, I guess.
And in the beginning, they used to go and drink in the swimming pool, which was very bad because many of them drowned. And so we have created this pond that's now behind you. You can't see the pond.
Oh.
And we create also a bee beach. It's called a bee beach. And the bee beach is a very gentle slope that goes into the pond so that they can fly there. And they drink, believe it or not, each one of these hives needs, in the summer, 4 gallons a day. They drink a lot.
I almost wish more people could see this. And I know that's a little naive because you do have security concerns and it's not your house, right? It's your people's house. So how do you get more people to see what we're seeing so that it spreads?
But first of all, we are extremely happy about the opportunity to talk about the project and to show it on different shows and to have journalists speak about it. And on the other hand, what we do with the neighborhood is when we have the yard sale for the honey, we open the gates here and we let people come in, and we have people from the embassy explaining what we're doing.
Nice.
And explaining the concept.
So. Are you going to do that again this year?
Of course.
Okay,
of course.
Put it on my calendar.
Because
I remember there was a furious thing on the listserv, the neighborhood listservs, about how quickly the honey sold out. And I definitely had...
After half an hour, we had to realize that we had to limit the sale to 1 jug a person.
People were hoarding.
Yeah, because it was going out so fast.
Yeah, I mean, these neighbors, they can be competitive. Yeah.
They were indeed competitive. The sale was starting at 9 o'clock, and by 8:30 there was a queue of 200 yards of people waiting for them.
It feels cooler out here than it does at my house.
Okay.
How's that possible?
Okay, so that's absolutely obvious. Wherever you are, if you are in a green area, the temperatures will, on average, on a very hot day, be 20 Fahrenheit less if there is green. I mean, modern cities are heat traps. They're actually heat traps. And one of the things that we have to do to fight global warming and to make our cities habitable again, especially if you think about some cities further south, it's to have more and more green spaces. And you really feel the difference. Yeah. You really do feel the difference.
Yeah. I mean, I can feel it here.
I mean, if you're on my terrace, which is a heat trap made of concrete, the difference is really palpable.
Huh.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to show us while we're out?
Tell Alexander to come over. Alexander is a professional gardener. He's been working for a very long time around the city. He comes from Salvador, and he's been passionate from the beginning. He loved the idea of changing the...
So from the beginning was on...
Yeah, he was on board. Yes, he was on board. Yeah. He really was.
Nice to meet you.
And he's been on the gardening team for many, many years, and he knows so much more about plants than I do that he's probably the person to interview.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Alexander, one of the gardeners on staff here who will testify firsthand to what it was like to try to keep up this property before it became a wildlife oasis.
This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show all about the psychology and economics behind our decisions. Each episode shares the latest research in behavioral science and dives into questions like, can we learn to make smarter decisions? Or what is the power of negative thinking? The show is hosted by Katie Milkman. She's an award-winning behavioral scientist, professor at the Wharton School, and author of the best-selling book, How to Change. In each episode, Katie talks to authors, athletes, Nobel laureates, and more about why we make irrational choices and how we can make better ones. Choiceology is out now. Listen and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast or find it wherever you listen.
We're back at the Swiss Ambassador's residence in Washington, D.C., where the lawn has been totally reimagined to support more life, including the life of the people who work on it full time.
My name is Alex Bonilla. I've been here with the Switzerland Embassy for about 10 years. And it's been a huge impact when Ambassador Peter Loeb arrived here. You know, we stopped using herbicides and chemicals on the grass, on the lawn, because, I mean, this basically, you can see it's a lot of clover, a lot of, you know, things. And then I create kind of meadows in between just to, the bees also take advantage of that, you know. And, you know, it's been grateful, very grateful to have this.
So you've seen the full spectrum, right,
exactly.
Of like perfectly golf course lawn and having to take care of that.
Yes, it's been different. So
I know you need to get back to work, and so does the ambassador. But can you describe what the difference is? Like if we were to go back in a time machine and be on this property 10 years ago when you first started, what's the difference in how it would look and also how it would feel and how your day would look, like the work that you do?
I probably won't go back where I was. You know, stop using chemicals and things like that, which is not good for me, for my health, for everybody else, you know, who's doing gardening.
So one change, it sounds like, is that you are less personally exposed. You and your colleagues are less exposed to dangerous chemicals.
Correct.
That's a big improvement. How does it look or feel differently than it did 10 years ago?
Well, it was more, you know, like you said, if it was a golf course, it was more maintenance, more like... the aspect of the lawn that needs to be neat and stuff like that. So I was not really happy using chemicals and things, or especially on the grounds, which have about 6 acres of grass. So
6 acres of grass, that's a lot. Yeah.
So it's not very easy to maintain. So it's better just to keep it like that, natural.
Well, this is helpful because we had talked about how transitioning it was quite labor intensive and expensive. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like once you get there, is it less labor intensive?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Thank you, Alexander.
You're welcome.
Maybe something that I should add is that what we are doing here is actually consistent with Switzerland's policy. We are trying, and we have a clear mandate by the government to try and raise the awareness for the environmental challenges. Switzerland is not perfect, but we are really trying hard. And so it's an official message, which means also that, because it's a question that I was asked a few weeks ago, so, and what if your successor doesn't like the biodiversity garden? Well, no choice. The biodiversity garden is here to stay, because this is the future. The future is to try and work for biodiversity.
I've heard a phrase that you use sometimes, environmental diplomacy, and that sounds like that's what you mean, right?
Environmental diplomacy is really trying to push on one side awareness, of course, for all the challenges that our environment is facing, but also trying to push the technologies that will help us deal with it. Yeah. Clean tech in particular, carbon capture technologies, all things that can be very good for the economy and at the same time very good for the environment. So it's not just a losing game where you have to make a choice between protecting your environment or making money. You can do both.
That's the beauty of it. Like, you can do less yard work and help the environment. Some birds.
Okay, so try and find out what they are.
Well, I heard a crow earlier. Did you
hear
that?
That was the easy one. Okay.
Come on.
Now let's speak about the other birds.
I was very proud of myself with the crow.
I know. Okay. Cicadas. Okay,
fine. Cicadas.
But they're not birds. I can hear the tufted titmouse in the background, but far away, this very high-pitched sound. That's the tufted titmouse.
Huh.
This morning there
Did you hear that? It's like an owl?
No, that's not an owl.
What is it?
That's the morning dove.
Oh.
Yeah.
Still, yeah. I get half a point.
But at least you... Well, yes, it was a bird. Okay. Fine.
but a commoner, I would assume.
It's definitely a commoner.
Yeah.
And this morning there was a house finch singing.
Hmm.
Very few birds keep singing in mid-July, late July, but the house finch was singing.
Hmm.
And as you can see, the mockingbird is inspecting.
Oh, yeah,
he's watching us. He doesn't like us to be here.
Just like you said, he would be
defending
his
territory. And of course, he's defending his territory.
He's standing on the corner
and
of
he has
this
old habit, so every evening at 5 o'clock, when the crows come back from whatever they were doing, he will attack them.
Oh.
And it's like an old couple fighting. You know, you know at 5 o'clock they're going to fight here in the airspace.
I feel like I've heard that from my house. It's
a
skirmish every night.
You see, that was one of the morning doves.
Okay.
They just flew by. No, it's gone already.
What do you call a group of crows again?
A murder.
A murder. I love that.
A murder of crows, yeah.
Another mocking of crows.
Yes, it is. No, that's probably a morning dove.
Morning
that's
dove.
A dove.
That's the dove up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a sentinel. He's got your back, this
Indeed.
Guy.
So we had this, we organized in March, April, a biodiversity month.
Hmm.
So we had a special envoy Kerry explaining to the diplomatic community what the plans of the administration are for the COP27.
Hmm.
And then we had a whole series, one on birds, one on insects, one on water, every time with some of the most amazing specialists.
Wow.
And the evening when we had the birders, so all the crazy birders of the area,
yeah,
we were gathered on the terrace.
Hmm.
And for the first time ever since I'm here, we had a bald eagle, an adult bald eagle, flying at eye level. He flew here.
Oh my gosh.
And we're all watching the bald eagle. Because normally if you see it around here, it would
it's
be
way up high.
You know, way
yeah.
up high. And he just flew here. Probably he knew that all the birders were there.
It's like he planned.
I do assume, yeah. And that night we also saw a common nighthawk, which I had never seen.
Seems like you are the Forrest Gump of birds. Like you are wherever the interesting birds are.
Birding is like a box of chocolate. You never know what you're going to see.
Thank you so much for inviting us into your home and showing us all that you've done. And it is truly an inspiration and a kind of oasis. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Thank you to Ambassador Jacques Pitlou for inviting us over and even sending us home with a sample of his in-demand DC honey. Make sure you listen to last week's episode with Doug Tallamy on the simple steps you can take in your own backyard. Speaking of, after last week's show, we actually got a few listener notes we wanted to share. The first is from Kelly. She says, if Judy is looking to attract hummingbirds, there are actually better plants than trumpet honeysuckle. She also says the magnolia is a good choice. They do get large, but grow slowly. And she loves herself an evergreen broadleaf tree. So there you go. We also got a note from Bernie, who has been transforming their yard into a bird and pollinator sanctuary for 5 years now, conducting daily insect observations and iNaturalist postings, and has spotted north of 500 different insect species so far. Very cool. What about you? Do you have a problem that feels enormous but still needs to be tackled one plant at a time? Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001. And we might have you on the show. Finally, one last note before we leave you for the week. We are aware, as you probably are, that it's been just about a year since the United States left Afghanistan and the Taliban swept into Kabul. If you haven't heard it already, we wanted to make sure you knew about an episode that we ran a few months ago about how to really help refugees. This is an episode that is near and dear to my heart after having spent months for a Politico story following a very unusual group of female Afghan soldiers who have been relocated to the United States. I learned so many things from this experience, and one of the most important things I learned was how important it is to listen to refugees themselves and the people who are working closely with them to understand what they need most and what they definitely don't need. So we wanted to let you know that that episode called How to Really Help Refugees is linked in the show notes. I hope you're able to give it a listen if you haven't already. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rosemary Belson produced this episode with help from Madeline Ducharme and Katie Shepherd. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown, remixed by Merritt Jacob, our technical director. Charles Duhigg created this show. I'm Amanda Ripley. Thanks for listening.
Now most of the chicks are out of the different bird species, meaning that the parents now have a dull plumage and they don't sing anymore because they have no reason to endanger themselves. You see, so right now it's not terribly, except of course from my resident mockingbird that is here, and as soon as we'll get out, he will come and inquire. He doesn't like anyone to be on his territory. He's attacking every bird coming into the way. So he's quite territorial. Yeah.